Hello and welcome to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. I'm Ralph Russo, college football writer with the Associated Press. This week on the show, Shahan Jeharaja from CBS Sports joins me. We're going to try to find some 12-team college football playoff sleeper teams, some contenders that maybe we wouldn't think of if we look at, the preseason polls and some of the early preseason rankings. One of the reasons why we like the 12-team playoff is that there's a chance to reward surprising teams better than the old 4-team playoff system. We're looking for teams that are likely to start outside the top 15 or so in the rankings, maybe unranked altogether, that have a chance to put together a special season and maybe make an expanded CFP field. Programming note, this episode was recorded about 5 days before it's posted. You're likely listening to this while I'm on vacation, but I didn't want to leave you hanging without a show, so here we go. It's going to be a little bit of an evergreen topic. So if you're wondering why we're skipping past something that's maybe in the news, well, that's why. Also, if you're looking for an NFL draft preview this week as we head towards the big show at the end of the week in Detroit, you can catch our previous episode with AP's NFL writer Rob Motti and his mock draft. Thanks for listening to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and just about anywhere you like to get your pods. If you like what you hear, please give us a good review and rating. It helps college football fans find us. It helps us find more college football fans, and away we go. Joining me this week on the podcast, Shahan Jeharaja from CBS Sports. He does a great job covering all things college football and, managing to squeeze in time to be a new dad as well. But decided to tap into Shahan to talk. Basically, Shahan, I was looking to dive into, we've had so much off-season, nonsense and realignment and the new model for paying players and all this stuff, right? We've had all this outside stuff, super leagues, and I just kind of wanted to dig into a cool off-season preview topic, right? Like, let's just try to find some sleeper teams, Shahan. What do you think?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I don't get asked very many questions about actual college football right now when I go on interviews. It's mostly about, when's the Super League coming? What should we do about NIL? So it's kind of fun to even now in April go and say, look, man, what's Iowa State's offensive line looking like? Like, it's yes, a lot of fun to kind of get back to things.
Yeah, and that's where we're trying to redirect this offseason. So I figured we'd dive into it with Shahani. So here was the premise. The premise is trying to find sleeper teams, playoff contenders. And that's a new concept because of the new playoff. In a 12-team playoff, you can now, we had TCU a couple of years ago was a real sleeper team, went from unranked to being in the top four. But with a 4-team playoff, you really don't get real sleepers. Maybe you have a team that comes from maybe 14 or 15 in the preseason rankings. That's sort of the outsider. But with a 12-team playoff, like last year, Mizzou probably would have been in a 12-team playoff. They weren't ranked to start the season. Ole Miss was ranked 22nd to start the season. They would have made a 12-team playoff. Oregon was something of a dark horse, right? Ranked 15 in the preseason poll. So what I told Shahan to do is look at Bill Conley's SP Plus ratings, preseason ratings, maybe whoever his favorite way too early top 25 guy, Dennis Dodd, your colleague there at CBS, and come up with some teams that are sort of 15 and beyond that you think, or 15-ish and beyond that you think might be playoff teams. Come, I got my list about four or five. Shahan's got his list about four or five. And we'll try to dream on some big seasons for some teams that, as of right now, might not start the season as obvious playoff contenders, but could end it that way. So where do you want to start? The floor is yours, Shahan. Where do you want to start?
Well, I think I'm going to start with one of the new teams in the Power Five. I think actually the only new team that officially is joining the Power Four, whatever you want to call it. Right. That's a whole other podcast to get into. But I'm going to start with SMU.
The new ACC member. All right.
Yeah, yeah, new ACC member. Maybe I'm a little biased because I live within, you know, a couple minutes of the campus, but
I was going to say your Lone Star is showing here, Sean.
Definitely. But what I'll say about them is I think that the way that they finished the year fell under the radar just a little bit. They did finish as an 11-win team. They ended up finishing just behind Liberty for that New Year's Six spot. And I think that if they had gotten that New Year's Six spot, one, I think they probably would have played Oregon better. And two, they might be a team that we're talking about as a preseason top 15 team. The headliner, of course, is what they do on offense and in the passing game. Preston Stone missed their AAC title game last year, missed the bowl game with an injury, but he should be back. He's cleared to go. They have one of the more impressive receiver rooms in the country. They've got a couple of big-time running backs. Kamar Wheaton was a former five-star. The one thing that I don't love is that they had two guys who were projected to come back on the offensive line who didn't and are now top transfers, but they still like what they have there. And defensively, I think that this might be where they've improved the most potentially. They added Jordan Jefferson, a transfer from Georgia, who is a big, big body, and Omari Aber from Ohio State. Like these are serious bodies. And I've kind of said, I feel like the way for a, let's say like a non-power two sort of team to really step up and make a run is to understand the balance of recruiting and developing well in high school, but also catching kind of those difference makers on the way down. And It's funny now too. I mean, obviously some of these guys who they brought in at defensive tackle, they weren't sure things, they're not proven commodities, which is why they weren't sought after. But you look in this post spring cycle, everybody is clamoring to try to find defensive tackles. And I think that SMU was able to strike early and get some guys who can really make a difference. And the other piece that you have to mention with all of this is, okay, so let's just say hypothetically, just for argument's sake, that Florida State takes a big step back. They lost a lot. Who is the team that just SMU cannot compete with in the ACC? I don't see them. There certainly are other teams that will be competitive. Clemson, I think, should take a step forward. Potentially one or two other teams that we might mention on this podcast. But I think SMU is right there to be able to step up and compete with anybody.
So we are going to sit in the ACC for a bit because you gave me a glance at your list and I made a list off of your list so we didn't overlap. And I have like a zillion ACC teams. Okay. So I don't want to, I want to break down all of them but I'll try to lump them all together and hit some high notes on it. And I know you have another ACC team as well. And it's exactly what you said. It's, we know Florida State is going to take a step back. How big of a step back? You know, it could be a significant step where they're maybe a 9-3, 8-4 team, or maybe it's just a recalibration and, hey, they're not an undefeated team, but they're still clearly the first or second best team in the ACC. And I think there's enough unknown around Clemson because of Dabo's insistence on, you know, being, you know, allergic to the portal. And what we've seen out of that offense over the last couple of years to say, like, I know Clemson is probably the most talented team on paper out of the recruiting rankings, but there's you gotta answer some questions here. So that once you put those two teams who are probably going to be the consensus 1 and 2 going into the season and say, but you're doing that with some question marks, I think it opens up the possibility of, okay, who would be the 1 and 2 ACC teams? And I got to tell you, I got Louisville, NC State, and even Virginia Tech as all intriguing for different reasons. Like Kyron Drones at Virginia Tech looks like a guy who I could see at the end of the year, hey, that might be the best quarterback in the ACC. They're playing feisty defense already under Brent Pry. Kind of like what I'm seeing there. Louisville brought in a whole bunch of playmakers, possible difference makers in the portal. We know Jeff Brohm always does a good job with offense. Like, I don't know if I'm on the Tyler Shuck train. Maybe you can convince me of that. Again, I'll let your Lone Star roots, like, maybe, you know, try to sell me on Tyler Shuck in year 7 or 8 or however long he's been there. But the fact of the matter is the kid has hardly ever been healthy. And if he is, that could be a pretty nice toy for Jeff Brohm to work with. And the other one is NC State, which has just sort of built up a pretty nice consistency in its program under under Dave Doran. So I got a bunch of ACC teams in there that I think, along with SMU, I think I can understand this idea of like, that's an interesting conference in that if you don't have a lock solid one and two, then what happens to let maybe one or two of these other teams to rise up from middle class to upper class?
Well, and you mentioned Tyler Shough transferring from a Lone Star State school. Of course, Kyron Drones, also from Houston, Texas, played at Baylor before he transferred. So really, when you think about it, I think college football is just actually the state of Texas. But no,
Y'all think that anyway. I mean, listen, that's ultimately that's the ethos of all of you guys down there. So but it isn't right. It's an interesting conference because of all those things. And as you said, like you just the other thing, too, I wanted to bring up, and I don't even know if. Like what SMU schedule was, you know, as these conferences grow so big, as much as like there's an opportunity for you to have a very hard schedule, if you look in the ACC, I think it was Virginia Tech. It's like home game against Clemson, no Florida State. Like some of these teams that miss Florida State or don't have Clemson and or Florida State, there's some opportunities there to build up a pretty nice record.
No, and looking at SMU's right now, you know, week four, they play TCU. We don't necessarily know what they're going to be exactly, but then week five, they host Florida State. So if you're able to win both those games and start 5-0, the next week is at Louisville. So that could be a huge game, not just in the ACC, but in college football at large. And if you survive that, I mean, not a lot scares you the whole rest of the way at Stanford, at Duke, Pitt, Boston College, Virginia, Cal. I mean, I would be pretty disappointed, to be honest, if they're not a 10-2 team. Like, I think that there's absolutely a pathway to that. And like you said, I mean, with the size of these conferences right now, the schedules are going to be so disparate. So having a nice pathway, I think, is a big part of this. Another team to wrap up maybe our ACC discussion a little bit. One of the biggest boom or bust teams, I think, to me in the nation is Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And look, another Texan quarterback, Cameron Ward from West Columbia. But I think that Miami last year was a lot closer than people realize. They, of course, had the high profile kind of late game flubs. You know, the Georgia Tech one really comes to mind as a game that it's truly astonishing that they didn't win.
It's still hard to believe. Still hard to believe that happened, John.
I mean, it's one of those games that I think I'm going to remember for years and just be like, I don't understand even just the math of how they did that. But they played Florida State within a touchdown. They played Louisville within a touchdown. So this was a team that was much closer to being pretty good than I think people realize. And you add a quarterback in Cameron Ward, who is just such an upgrade in my mind from what they've had the past couple of years. You know, Tyler Van Dyke obviously is going to have an opportunity to have a fresh start at Wisconsin, but a lot was asked of him, I think, last year, and I don't necessarily know that he really had the goods in some ways. But now you have Cameron Ward coming in. I think he's going to solidify that position. Defensively, they did some nice things last year. I think that they made the kind of improvement that you would have liked. I still like their skill talent quite a bit. They've been very aggressive in the transfer portal, not just with Cam Taylor, but Cam Ward rather, but you know, also adding some players in the trenches, adding some players on the defensive line. They've got some talented wide receivers also coming back, including a pair of top 100 players who are coming in as freshmen. So obviously, we're kind of waiting for the Mario Cristobal thing to start working at Miami. And there's a chance it just doesn't. Like, that is absolutely a chance. But I think when you look at the combination of talent they have coming into the program, opportunity in front of them, and having a player like Cam Ward to come in and maybe just be the piece that brings it all together. Like, when you talk about upside, I think their upside is as high as anybody in the ACC.
Yeah, my line on Mario has been, I think he's going to recruit his way out of this. You can give me all the questions about him as a game coach, and that's fine. Like, they're all there. But he's now, I believe, had two top five or six classes. Now, there's already been some attrition on that first class, that 2023 class. So, you know, that's sort of the way of the world. But this gives me an opportunity to talk about maybe my favorite player in college football this year. He was a freshman last year. Reuben Bain, the defensive end, the edge rusher from Miami. That dude, you can just, I'm just going to say right now, like for all you draft Knicks out there, just pencil that guy into your top five of, I guess it would be the 2026 draft, right? Because he's just a sophomore. He's got another one to go. That guy is a beast. So you throw a guy like him, they've got some difference makers there. And my sense is, you're right, whether it's this year or eventually, they're going to put a team together that's going to look like a playoff team because they're just recruiting at such a high level. Maybe it's this year, we'll see. But the ACC is just chock full of intrigue and possible dark horses. If I pushed you out of the ACC, where are you going?
Yeah, let's actually go to a team that Miami played last year and picked up what seemed at the time to be a pretty nice win against, and then both teams kind of just did what they do. I guess I thought
it was a big deal too, by the way, when they beat Texas A&M.
It felt like it at the time, right? It did. I'm sorry, I'm taking us back to Lone Star State. I didn't intend to do that, but
that's fine.
We're going to Texas A&M, and this is another program where there's a narrow pathway to this working. But I kind of feel like they might have the staff to walk that narrow line. And the reason that I say that is, you know, Mike Elko comes in. He has done a tremendous job maximizing his rosters. Of course, at Duke, won 9 games his first year, had another very competitive team the next year that probably would have won more games if Riley Leonard doesn't get hurt. Sure. And he's stepping into a situation at Texas A&M where they have this great combination of talent and transfers and guys coming in where I feel like it's just something that could work. Connor Wegman is a returning quarterback for them, and he's going to get a chance to work with offensive coordinator Colin Klein, which is a crazy sentence still, even after a couple of years. But Colin Klein did a tremendous job with quarterbacks during his time at Kansas State. Developed Will Howard, of course, into a quarterback that Ohio State and USC fought over, which was not the case whenever he got on campus. And Wegman is certainly a more talented passer than I think that Klein has ever worked with. And the other thing that I like about it is, I mean, when I talk about vibe shifts, it is every way at Texas A&M.
It really is. Right.
One, in terms of just the way that Jimbo Fisher, Mike Elko are. Like, Jimbo Fisher was this high money, off on his own world sort of coach. And Mike Elko is like a sit down and grind it out football coach. And the question for me was, can you, as that kind of coach, get the kind of talent that you need on campus? And he'll have to put together, of course, a high school recruiting class. But in the transfer world, they have the number 2 class in the country. And it is not a volume game. It is very much an impact player game. So they've done a great job so far. And I think the other piece is that this is just a staff with a history of making things work. And I mentioned, of course, Mike Elko at Duke and making things work on the defensive side of the ball, bringing in some 5th and 6th year guys who haven't been big time players and figuring it out. On the offensive side, Colin Klein, again, I think that you look at what he did with Deuce Vaughn at Kansas State. You look at what he did with Ben Sinnott, one of my favorite players in college football at tight end last year at Kansas State. And now you step into a room where, yes, I don't know exactly how well the pieces fit together, but dang if the pieces aren't talented. I think that this is a staff that will quickly build a reputation for figuring things out. Now, the one thing I will say is that being a surprise team in the SEC.
Yeah, good luck with that. That's exactly what I was thinking, Sean.
It's hard. Yeah. There is not a clean pathway because, like I mentioned SMU, right? Like SMU, I think, could be a top 15 quality team in the country, for example. Being a top 15 quality team this upcoming year in the SEC might get you 5th place. Mm. Like just with the amount of teams that are bringing stuff back. They also open against Notre Dame. So if they lose that game, that might just be it for their playoff case because of what they'll play later in conference play, finishing out with a big, 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 big game against Texas. Mm-hmm. But I do think that if we're sitting here in November and we're like, wow, I cannot believe how fast Mike Elko figured this thing out, I don't think I'd be that surprised.
Yeah, I like that one as well. And you're right. I mean, I didn't pick an SEC team. And if I was going to, it probably would have been that, just in part because, like, it's hard to find dark horses when, again, just using Bill C's SP Plus rankings, it's like, you know, who's the dark horse if Oklahoma's 14 and Tennessee's 15? And A&M is actually ahead of them in Bill's rankings, though I will say this. When it comes to the human polls, I think there's going to be a lot of reservations about A&M. Right. I doubt A&M will be at best maybe way back end of the top 25, because I think humans, frankly, have been tired of getting burned by Texas A&M over the last couple of years. And then you throw in a new coach and a quarterback returning from injury. There's enough uncertainty that I think the humans are going to pull back. But again, you know, Bill's numbers usually work pretty well. And if that's the number 13 team in the country heading into the preseason, there's probably something under that hood that works pretty well. The other thing I would say is, you know, that amazing recruiting class from a couple of years ago. What was that? 2 years ago? A year and a half? Time
2022. Yeah.
Yeah. Time moves quickly. That, you know, caused a big stir between Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban. A lot of attrition from that class. A lot of guys from that class gone. Not all of them. There's still some, like Jimbo left some players behind for Mike Elko. So that'll be an interesting one. Yeah, I kind of like that one. Again, I couldn't find a team out of the SEC to really get behind as far as a dark horse. But A&M, to me, especially with Wegman, what are your thoughts on Wegman?
Yeah, I definitely, I would consider myself cautiously optimistic. I'm not all the way there on him. I know there are some numbers from last year that look amazing, but it was also three games and non-conference. So I don't want to inflate what he accomplished through his first 2 years. But I do think that this is a player who does a lot of things well. I think that he's decisive with the ball. He can clearly make all the throws. I think that he's also a player who I expect to benefit from not playing in a Jimbo Fisher offense and being able to maybe use his legs a little bit more, not even just as a runner, but just getting out of the pocket. And again, I think that his physical skills are as good as anybody as a passer in the SEC heading into next year. And the one thing that you do say about the 2024 SEC is that, you know, Carson Beck's number one, Quinn Ewers is number two. I think there's a lot of opportunity for somebody to crash the party in terms of best quarterbacks in the conference. Yeah. I don't think that this is a truly solidified list with some of the turnover that's going to be happening. And so I wouldn't be surprised, certainly, if Connor Wegman is able to work his way up. But I also, again, I wouldn't. But I don't think that he's ready right this second to say, oh, he's about to have this game-changing, you know, borderline Heisman season necessarily. But I do like what they have in him, and not just for next year, but even for the year after that, if he ends up sticking around. I think that he has a chance to really solidify that position.
Let's roll over to the Big 12, where in some ways you could make an argument that almost all these teams have sort of the dark horse-ish profile in so far as, like, I don't know if anybody's going to be a top 10 team in the rankings going into the 2024 season from the Big 12. Maybe Utah. I think Utah has gotten a lot of respect and have enough guys back that I could see voters coalescing around them. But again, if you want to look at Bill C's numbers, there's a big clump of Big 12 teams between about 17 and about 25, right? So again, clearly one or two of those teams, I think the voters will get behind and you'll probably have a better ranking when it comes to the preseason people polls. The AP poll will probably, I would guess at least one or two of them are in the top 15. But again, it's a conference that we expect to be highly competitive, but maybe not have a clear favorite. Again, Utah's sort of taking that. I think we both have one. The one I'm leaning towards is Kansas State. frankly, Shahan, it might just be me being an Avery Johnson fanboy. Like the kid has a chance to be an amazing player. And I do like what they've got, a fair amount of experience coming back on defense. Some guys who you're like, oh, that guy's back for his fifth year. Or, oh, that guy's back for his sixth year. So I like that. And Joel Klanderman having the defensive coordinator, having the opportunity to have that mix of like some younger guys, but a fair amount of experience on defense. But man, this just might be me endorsing Avery Johnson.
Well, I think I have two thoughts on this. One, I feel like Kansas State in terms of the Big 12 race is just like, I think they've reached the level where you just kind of slot them in, where you just consider them to be one of the two or three top contenders year in and year out. And I agree, I'm a huge fan of Avery Johnson. I'm a little more interested in how they replace some stuff in the trenches. So I would come just a little short of having them as like a true breakout team.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but they do. Yeah, they rebuilt their offensive line. They're almost every position is some type of tinker, right, on their offensive line. So I'm sorry to cut you off there.
No, 100%. And I can't tell you how many messages I got from Kansas State fans saying, so are you going to vote Cooper Beebe for Heisman last year? And obviously I didn't, and also don't have a Heisman vote. But, you know, he is a really, really good player at left guard who's now going to have a chance to go in the first two rounds of the NFL draft. I'm going to move across the one of their rivalries to a team that ranks number two in returning production, that ranks top five in both offensive and defensive returning production, and that's Iowa State.
That's an intriguing one too. Yeah, I like that.
I think people have sold their Matt Campbell stock way too quickly.
Not all of us.
I'm glad to hear it. Yeah, I'm glad to hear it. They had a bad 4-8 year. There's no question. It was a bad year 2 years ago. And last year, it seemed like things were going to be a total freaking disaster, to be honest, after they lose, I believe it was to Ohio in week three. But then they just went 6-3 in conference play and finished with 7 wins somehow after starting 1-2. This is a team that I think has a lot of sneaky upside. They replaced Hunter Deckers, who's a quarterback I was very high on before he, of course, got caught up in the gambling investigation, with Rocco Becht, who's a player who I actually think has showed a little bit more gamesmanship, I guess you could say, as a college player.
Yeah.
And they have this group of running backs that I am fascinated by. The headliner for them is Abu Samah III. He was like this legendary high school player in the state of Iowa, and he is just a spark plug. He just makes big plays happen. But they've also got a couple of other guys who can do some of the more intermediate work defensively. I mean, I think John Heacock is one of the most underrated coaches, maybe as a defensive coordinator in college football.
Yeah, they always have a defense that produces more than, like, you talk about the ethos of, like, you know, five-star culture, which has always been Matt Campbell's thing. The sum is always greater than the parts there at Iowa State when it comes to the defensive side of the ball, and it's a lot because of Heacock.
Absolutely. And so I think that you trust what they have there. Now, the one small piece of concern that I have is that their offensive coordinator, Nate Shielhouse, left for a job in the NFL. And I kind of felt like he might be special, like he might have something. And so we're going to have to kind of see them build on that season without Shielhouse out there. But I still think that talent wise, this is a program in a good place. I still expect them to continue to develop. And they did things at such a high level by the end of last year that the hope is that whoever they have coming in on their coaching staff can kind of just ride with it. And the other thing too, I mean, this is not a brutal schedule by any means. Early on, you know, you get a rebuilding Houston, you get a Baylor that's trying to figure things out. I think that their first, putting Iowa aside, obviously that's kind of in its own category. Their only big test, I'd say, before November is at West Virginia. And again, if they can survive that game, then there's a pathway to, you know, 7-1, 8-0, heading into at Kansas. You've got at Utah and then Kansas State all in the last 4 weeks of the year. So I think it's a team that heading into November could very much be in the mix for the Big 12 championship and a spot in the Big 12 championship game. And Iowa State fans will tell you they haven't won a conference championship of any sort since 1912. Maybe this is the year that they can do it.
Yeah, I think the theme of the Big 12 going forward is going to be, as we said, competitiveness and this idea that, it's always been a conference, over even with Texas and Oklahoma in it, it was a conference that traditionally produced a lot of surprise teams. Maybe they didn't win, maybe they weren't good enough to beat Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship game for a big stretch of years, but you found years where, oh, a pop-up year from Iowa State, a pop-up year from Baylor, Oklahoma State, this is their year to win 10 games. Kansas State, Kansas is looking like an interesting team too, and even West Virginia fans who are really excited about what they have coming back. So if you want to pencil in a conference that is likely to have a team that is unranked to start the season playing in its conference championship game, the Big 12 has always been good with that, even during the Texas-Oklahoma era. And I think nowadays it will be even more so, that type of conference. So I know you have one more left. I have one more. I'm going to give you mine real quick because I tried to look in the biggest, the power two, so to speak, the big two. Again, somewhat not quite as deep as the SEC, but in the Big 10, you have these, Ohio State, Michigan, now Oregon, and Penn State, which is, they still have a lot to prove, but nonetheless, Penn State is pretty damn good, right? You can pencil in Penn State for being the fourth best team in that conference, and that probably makes them a top 15 team. It's hard for me to see somebody breaking through that. The one team I'll throw out at you is maybe Wisconsin. I think Phil Longo's offense in year two with Tyler Van Dyke, maybe some improved playmakers on the outside. They were okay last year. The general industry was overrating Wisconsin going into last year, not taking into account how much turnover they were going to have. The change of identity was going to take in Luke Fickell's first year, but they weren't terrible in Luke Fickell's first year. And I could see a significant jump forward. No Ohio State on the schedule, no Michigan on the schedule, and you got three tough games with Alabama, by the way, Oregon and Penn State, but they're all coming to Camp Randall. So if I'm going to pencil in I'm going to keep my eye out for this team in the Big Ten, it's going to be Wisconsin. What's your last one there, Sean?
Yeah. And just to touch on that, they got to get that quarterback position right. Like that's just, they've added two transfers the last 2 years, I guess, both from the South, of course. And I don't know if Tyler Van Dyke's the guy that I want to be riding into battle with, trying to figure out.
I have some doubts, but I do I think there might be something in there that we could see a little bit of this, super experienced guy who it all sort of melds and comes together in his fifth year with that offense. Like, not necessarily that he's going to be Jaden Daniels and burst on the scene that way, or even like Bo Nix or Michael Penix. But I could see, I've seen it before in him, so maybe we can see it again. Somewhere in there, I think there's a possible big year. But, but yes, I understand your skepticism.
I'm going to close out. Of course, it's a little bit of a cheat to kind of go in and say the Group of Five team, because they're going to kind of be doing something a little different. But I look at the top contenders that people are expecting from the Group of Five. Liberty will have a chance again with what they bring back in Caden Salter and a very manageable conference slate. Tulane, I think, has a great chance to continue to rise up. Memphis, similar deal. But I think that the class of the Group of Five next year just might be Boise State. This was a team that fired their coach midway through the year and then went on with their interim, Spencer Danielson, to win the Mountain West for the first time since 2019. And not only do they bring a decent amount of their roster back in 2024, they add a quarterback in Malachi Nelson that certainly seems flawed, but also might still be really, really talented and might be a great fit for this level. Size was always kind of the issue with him, that he's a little skinny. I don't think that's going to be as big of a concern coming in. Now, what they do this upcoming year is going to be very different with Talen Green transferring to Arkansas, but I expect them to go more in a passing, not necessarily pro style direction, but lean on that a little more. And they have the benefit too of one of the best running backs that nobody talks about, Ashton Jeanty, just a tremendous, tremendous player. And defensively is really where they return the most. They're top 25 nationally in returning defensive production with a defensive head coach as well. This is a program that I could see going on a bit of a heater. Now, I will say, just to get this out of the way, they're going to get stuffed into a locker week two when they play at Oregon. But if you survive that, I think they could easily burn through the rest of the schedule. They get both Washington State and Oregon State, so that'll be an interesting dynamic. But both those teams kind of rebuilding after what happened last year. And I don't see a team on this schedule that they shouldn't be favored, not just by a little bit, but potentially by a decent amount.
Yeah, interesting one. Yeah, and you know, you talk about the defensive side of the ball. They promoted Spencer Danielson, who was the defensive coordinator, and that's how. And before they made their big run, now they had a change of offensive coordinator. They lost Bush Hamden to Kentucky. They bring back Dirk Cutter. Yes, that guy. But you know what? Older coach who has bring in some pretty good ideas. He helped actually turn that offense around the year before, or a couple of years back when they were having some issues. So I do. I like the idea of, like, you know, some good pieces there, pretty sharp defensive coach. You're right, to a certain degree, all the group of five teams are kind of dark horses, but Boise State definitely should come into this season. I like the Malachi thing too, right? Losing Talen Green, he's a physical specimen, and he's off at Arkansas now. But the Malachi Nelson thing, I think, is absolutely intriguing. Shahan, man, I think we killed it. I think we gave some folks some teams to keep an eye out on, and really, you know, stayed away from all the nasty talk about college sports and just kept it on the field, man.
Whenever Iowa State's playing in the national championship game next year, you can say that you heard it here first.
It was a good whip around. Shahan Jeyaraja is from CBS Sports. He does a great job of covering all things college football. Hey, man, again, appreciate your time. Great insight, and good luck with that little girl.
Thank you so much for having me.
And now three and out. First down. Couple more thoughts on the draft. Every year I give out a few of my guys, players that won't go in the first round, but I'd bet end up being productive NFL players. Here's a few. He is built like a bowling ball at about 5'9", 220, but Marshawn Lloyd is a guy who I think got really underused by USC, maybe both USCs. He played at Southern California last year after transferring from South Carolina. There are no first-round running backs this year. There are several guys like Blake Corum, Jonathan Brooks from Texas, maybe even Braylon Allen from Wisconsin, who I think come in with a little more hype and maybe some overall production. Lloyd runs very tough, rarely has negative runs. I would not be surprised a few years from now if he is not the best back in this class. A little farther down the list, probably a sixth or seventh rounder, Dylan Johnson from Washington, another guy who on toughness alone could make a nice career as kind of a 1B type back in the NFL. Theo Johnson, the tight end from Penn State, is another guy who I think was underutilized in college that I think could turn into a really good pro player. You know, there's a lot of skills there that suggest he could have been a first round talent. There are so many good wide receivers in this draft. It seems to be like the case every year, but especially in this draft. I love Malik Washington of Virginia as a day three pick who could stick, plays a lot bigger than his 5'8", 190 pounds, and catches everything. On the defensive side, I promise you, Utah safety Sione Vaki, who also moonlighted at running back last year for the Utes, will start in the NFL. Some team will probably grab him in like the fifth or sixth round. I will pound the table for Braden Fisk of Florida State to be a first rounder, though he will probably go more like the second or third. At linebacker, Edifuan Olafashio of Washington is an older player with some injury history that might limit his effectiveness in the NFL, but I do think he has the athleticism and smarts to be a productive starter. I could also just see him being the type of guy who ends up being sort of a good glue guy in the locker room, a really mature player. So those are my guys in this year's NFL draft. Second down. Little tip. Those way too early mock drafts for 2025 that you'll see later this week, including one from me, are probably more useful than you think. Listen, I'm no Mel Kiper, but even I was able to identify in April of 2023 more than a dozen players who are likely to go in the first round this year, several in the top 10. And even more relevant, most of the players who I tabbed as first rounders last year, who aren't going to actually be in the first round, are very likely to be selected on day two. Getting the actual draft order right is pure folly, of course, but if you're looking for players to keep an eye on for this upcoming season and some breakout candidates, the way too early mock drafts can actually be a pretty useful guide. Third down. The NCAA Football Oversight Committee rubber-stamped a couple of rules committee proposals that will go into effect this season. Coach-to-player helmet communication is here, finally. It only took one of the wildest scandals in recent college football history involving the eventual national champions for the powers that be to finally decide, hey, all these sideline signs, they're pretty ridiculous and we should probably get rid of them. Also, there will be a 2-minute warning in college football games next year for the first time, which I am totally ambivalent about, but surely it will upset some fans out there. That's the show for today. I'd like to thank my producer, John Radcliffe, for making me sound good. You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, just about anywhere you get your pods. Please follow us so you do not miss an episode. I'm Ralph Russo, the college football writer with the Associated Press. Thanks for listening, and come back for more next week of the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast.